Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed
on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, our special guest this evening is Constance Cumby, and we're going to be talking about her views of what's going on. Constance, as many of you know, has been working for many, many years trying to educate people about the New Age movement. This movement that has a profound impact on every aspect of our lives. A movement that is intent upon bringing about a one world government, a one world leader, a new world religion. And it is certainly working within the shadows. It has extensions into every aspect of society today. And certainly you cannot understand any of the things that are taking place politically or ideologically or culturally. You can't understand the wars we've gotten into. You can't understand what's going on in the Middle East today or the Near East today without understanding the spiritual implications of this movement. And yet most people are totally unaware it's there, and certainly most people are totally unaware of the implications of its power. Well, with that as a background, Constance, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Well, thanks, Dr. Stan, for that. Finney, I hope your throat is getting a little better.
Oh, I'm getting lots better, thank you.
Great, okay. I discovered the New Age movement in 1981 and have been looking at it, and I think being observed slowed its momentum down for a time and a space. They tried renaming it. They even wrote books about it that was discovered under one name. And one book was named in a book by Professor Mark Woodhouse called The Paradigm Wars. He said then they would just rename it something else and go on. And so they did. They gave it a number of various other monikers, cultural, creative, the New Paradigm Movement, Global Transformation. They gave it as many names as Carter has little liver pills, perhaps. And but lately there's been a new movement on and new momentum. And we're seeing a rash of things designed to put people in an altered state and ready to accept the teachings of the movement. The secret, which has been greatly touted in another movie called One, which is circulating in, quote, transformational groups, making their, quote, renewals, various religious renewals. And many people, again, are being not so subtly sucked into the mindset.
No question at all. They're very, very subtle. In fact, I think this movement of the secret, Rhonda Burns, the secret is one of the most dangerous things we face today, although certainly the moving into the Christian church, we see the emerging church movement, the centering movement in Christian yoga, and the idea, of course, we're going to change certainly the prayer techniques, certainly the influence of music in the Christian church, everything to take people away from the Christian message.
I've seen opposition speaking to it, and I've seen them, they're advancing it very, very boldly. At the same time, there are now more people than ever speaking out boldly against it, which has been encouraging to me. It's almost like God is drawing lines of demarcation, and the people are joining up one side or the other on this issue.
Well, there certainly is no position of neutrality. You're going to have to be on one side or the other of this issue. Well, we're coming to a break here, so you just hold that thought, Constance. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, Constance Gumby, and we're going to be talking about the plan to transform society. Go ahead, Constance.
When I started looking at this and looking at the materials, and I was struck by how parallel it appeared to be to the prophecies and the very plain prophecies in the Bible about the Antichrist and the last day developments that would usher him in. And I couldn't help but see parallels. And then I noticed that some of the books were getting bolder on it. And then I collected so many very crazy books about this that some of them almost got lost in the shuffle. And it was suggested one day that by the attorneys that I shared office space with in downtown Detroit that I might like to use their computer. I had a dedicated Wangward processor, but they had a TRS Model 3, which was really something in those days. And they suggested that I might like to acquire my own software and use their computer to archive my collection. So I said that was a good idea, and I started working on it. I was using the computer that Anita Baker, the Slinger, who was a secretary for our office back in those days, that was her main computer. And I was using it at night after Anita went home and then picking up so she could resume on it in the morning. And I came to one book, and it was called The Reappearance of the Christ by Benjamin Creme, C-R-E-M-E. And I was just astounded at the content, and in the back was a section called How the Plan is Working Out.
Yeah, because they always refer to the plan with a capital P, don't they?
That's right. And I would have sworn they were working on a plan, but up until that point, I didn't have any written confirmation from the New Agers that it was anything more than something maybe coincidental or accidental earthquakes. But he talked very specifically and quoted chapter and verse and sources, and so I thought the book was significant, and I carried it with me night and day. And one day I lost it over at the St. Clair Shores District Court. I lost it either there or in the big boy next door to the court, the restaurant. And it wasn't the kind of book where you get on the phone and say, my name is Constance Cumby. I'm an attorney in downtown Detroit, and I lost my copy of The Reappearance of the Christ by Benjamin Creme. Dr. Stan, I was just hoping that the janitor would quietly throw it in the wastebasket and never mention it to anybody again. But I had to have that book, and so when I closed my office that afternoon, I went to the bookstore where I originally purchased it, walked in, the manager was standing there, and he said, what can we do for you tonight, Constance? And I said, do you have The Reappearance of the Christ by Benjamin Creme? He said, nope, sorry, Constance, we're all sold out, but here, Unity's bringing him to town, and he handed me a flyer from Unity, the same church as Unity Village, Lee Summit, Missouri.
Okay, hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Constance Cumby. She is talking about the plan. Now, there is a master plan, and whenever they describe it, they always capitalize the P. And, of course, this is described in a book called The Reappearance of the Christ?
That was one of many books that was. He had quoted heavily from Alice Bailey, to whom he acknowledged enormous debt, and I've seen her books and Madame Blavatsky's and some of the Rorick books and some of the other books that he mentioned.
Now, this book, of course, is written by
that flyer.
This book is written by Benjamin Creme.
Benjamin Creme.
And, of course, Constance finds that this book, which she knows is very, very important, written by Benjamin Creme, and now she suddenly discovers that Benjamin Creme, the leader of this New Age movement,
he wasn't the leader. He's not even probably one of the most important figures. The movement is very, very vast, but he certainly is much more important in the New Age movement than much of the disinformation in the evangelical movement has made him out to be. Benjamin Tent is indeed important. If you go on the internet and Google him, you'll find tens of thousands of hits on him.
And of course, he's coming to Detroit, where Constance.
He came to Detroit, but at that point, I didn't know he was coming to Detroit. I was handed a flyer, and I looked at that flyer, and it was Unity. And this Unity Church in Detroit was extremely politically powerful. Many politicians thought they had to make mandatory appearances there and say wonderful things about it just to be in the voters' good graces. And he said, Unity's bringing him to town. You can hear him in person. And I read that flyer with my mouth open. I said, well, this is no Christ, that's for sure. But if Unity, as politically powerful as they are, is willing to stick their neck out on this, something is happening that's important. So I made plans to attend, and I took a few Christian spies with me. And we arrived November 4th, 1981. In fact, we walked in just ahead of Benjamin Krem, distinguished-looking English gentleman who was 25 years younger than he is now, and so was I, and so were you. But anyway, we walked in ahead, and when I got inside, I was astounded. It was packed. We had to take seats near the back, and I thought we had arrived fairly early. And there were the hall was seated 1,300. Every last seat was taken, and the standing room also was filled. And it was a multi. The balcony was full. Everything was full. And Benjamin Krem came in, and it looked like he was waving to somebody. It looked like a hand signal went. And I had talked to some people there. I was astounded to see a former head of the Detroit Council of Churches, many people I'd known from political circles, a former law partner. Right behind me was a film producer I had known from Detroit circles who was a real regular guy. And I asked him, I said, Al, I said, I know what I'm doing here tonight. What are you doing here? And he said, because, Connie, he said, I'm taking a course in miracles at Unity. He said, we were all required to take a spiritual growth class. I chose a course in miracles, and it was a class requirement that we attend, and so I'm here. He said, you know, I would have thought a progressive person like you would have joined Unity long ago. And then I explained to Al what was going on, and he appeared to sober up for a couple minutes, and he thanked me for telling him. And then Krem came in, waved his hands, and the whole audience appeared to slip into some type of a trance, with the exception of me and my few spies. And the ease with which they went under suggested that they had all been subject to some kind of prior conditioning or another. And Benjamin Krem said ridiculous things all night long. In fact, he talked virtually about bloodshed that would take place if people didn't accept this, that the Pope would be bowing his knee, so on and so forth. And then he took a break, and he came and he announced that after the break, they would recite the great invocation when they came back, and then there would be a transmission directly from Maitreya the Christ.
There would be a transmission?
Yes.
Right.
Maitreya would overshadow Benjamin Krem, and that the words that would come through Benjamin Krem would be a new message to the crowd from Maitreya.
And this is basically be really sort of like a channeling session, as if you were going to a medium.
Like I told people, I said, I didn't think it was anything other than something a talented exorcist could probably cure. But anyway, it was he came in, and I told this to your people before, but in case people think that these people have a lot of power that's very scary. They do, but there's a greater power with us. And I told the woman standing next to me, I said, I hope it doesn't offend you, I said, but I will not join in reciting the great invocation with you. I will say my own prayer. And she was a very prim and proper little black woman, the type that looked like she could be active in any black Baptist congregation in Detroit and be a pillar of the church. And she said, no, honey. She was kind. She said, we all have our own path to God. And I said, the reason I will not say the great invocation is the Bible said very clearly that the Antichrist would come denying Jesus was the Christ. Benjamin Krem has denied it all evening and said that Jesus was not the Christ and this Maitreya was. And the woman repeated what Benjamin Krem had been saying all evening. There have been many Christs. I said, there's been one, and his name is Jesus. and they turned from my rose around and looked at me as though I were from outer space. Normally, she probably might have been looked at like she was from outer space. But anyway, Benjamin Krem came in, and he started out from the point of light, and the audience was all chanting it with him. And the point of light was in the mind of God. May light stream forth. And I went nice and loud. I said, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And we did that every stanza. And we got to the end. And they have a very creepy line in their great invocation, which they say is going to be the New World Prayer under their Maitreya the Christ, under the New World Religion. And so may light and love and power restore the plan on earth, and may it seal the door where evil dwells, which they define in their book as collectively disposing of Orthodox Jews, Orthodox Christians, and Orthodox Muslims who don't forsake their religions for the New Age mysticism that this is. And I said nice and loud and strong, I said, may Jesus Christ return to earth and end the evil present in this room tonight. Well, Benjamin Krem waited, and he waited, and he waited. And he was honestly waiting for something to come over him. If he had been faking it, he could have made up anything. And it didn't happen. And he finally, after 10 minutes of waiting for something to happen, which didn't happen, he said to the crowd, that will be all, you are dismissed. And they went out there, and of course the New Agers in the group, and one of them was the head of the holistic, was the publicity director of the Southeastern Michigan Holistic Health Association. And he was furious. He had been the master of ceremonies for the evening. And of course they're all glaring at me, and I said, well, I said, if you're Maitreya the Christ, Betraya the Christ, or whatever his name's supposed to be, for everything he's cracked up to be, one lousy Christian in the room saying the Lord's Prayer shouldn't have stopped him. And that's, anyway, it's been a long struggle. There were incredible efforts even before this. In 1979, the International Cooperation Council, which was a branch of the Unity and Diversity Council, it was chaired by Leland Stewart, and they had a directory which had literally thousands of New Age groups listed in it, and then there were more available where you could get up to 10,000 listings, and it included groups such as the Integral Yoga Center, which had been one of the groups in Detroit active with Unity in staging this. Leland Stewart, John White, who has written things that some of the conservatives interested in Second Amendment causes and the militia causes wrote the foreword to their book, and he wrote that, and he's been aligned with Tom Bearden, who many in the conservative movement have plugged into thinking it's reputable, and he wrote that they were a new species, that they were evolving into a new species, that it was making its way into the planet, and they were going to make species war with the rest of us and take the planet. And then the same directory spelled out how they had been instrumental in bringing Benjamin Krem in 1979 to the United States for his 1978 for his first appearance in the United States. This was the 1979 directory. And all through the book, hundreds, thousands of groups working consciously to usher in a new Messiah who was neither Christ nor Jesus, who were working for global government, which they're now calling global governance, who were working for a new world order, who were working for a new world information order, which, by the way, is in very heavy throes right now from some frightening sources that you and I have discussed before. And there were some very official movements, meetings held on that by much more official sources at the Brookings Institution on March 21st of this year, and one person that you and I have discussed frequently even on your program was very worried about what he called the YouTube effect, and that the media now was making everybody a potential player, and he said the problem was nobody wants to obey. And basically he said they had to do something about this in the New World Order. It wasn't going to be successful. They had to do something to control this YouTube effect. And he wasn't meaning just YouTube videos. He was talking about the access now of everybody to the media.
Well, I think that this group of people, I think that they, of course, are deeply involved with the occult. I think they permeate every aspect of our life. I think they're working as rapidly as they can to establish their one world government.
And of course, they're working actively, they're working frantically, but here is the part about their new Christ. They openly attribute the power not to God Almighty. They attribute it to somebody they call a planetary savior who made an incredible sacrifice for our planet. For them, their planetary savior is none other than Lucifer.
And of course, the thing is,
the very unholy trinity they're looking at.
Satan, the Antichrist, and of course, the false prophet. They're out there, they're real, and they permeate so many of our organizations. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, where would you like me to?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
All right. Recall correctly.
All right.
And I think he's still living, even may even still be working.
But of course, he had been writing books on the New World Order.
That's right. And he said, and Wes said at the time, this struck him as terribly odd. And he said he'd sat there and they were having lunch, and he said, "Come on, Dick." He said, "You don't expect, you're not going to tell me you really believe this, do you?" And he said that Richard Falk said, "No, Wesley," he said, "I'm not going to tell you that." He said, "But I will tell you this." He said, "If you had been paid to write that book, what I had been paid to write that book, you would have written exactly the same thing." And he said he told him the name of the benefactor. It was an extremely wealthy man, and I've learned since it was the Annenberg Foundation. A-N-N-E-N-B-E-R-G, I believe it's spelled. It might be B-U-R-G. It's one or the other. But Annenberg. And they, many, many wealthy foundations have been in on the funding scene on much of this. You've had wealthy people who evidently are subjected to these forms of mind control over the years, and then they end up putting their money where their mouth is.
And, of course, they're pushing this idea of a one-world government.
Oh, yes, and they're a major push on it now. Now they're not playing anymore. There was a conference at by the Brookings Institution on March 21st, 2007. It was chaired, it was opened by Carlos Pasquale, the assistant director, and he explained that they were setting up the theological, the intellectual and political underpinnings of this, that they had to have it in place to present to the new president in 2009, whoever the new president is that takes office in 2009, that they had to have it all in place by 2009. And they were busy setting up this, and that Job Talbot, the director of the Brookings Institute, who's a former head of World Federalist, which was also headed in the past by Donald Keyes, who was also a former administrator of Lucis Press, the former Lucifer Publishing Company, they were putting this in place, and that and Strobe Talbot then introduced Javier Solana, who he said was playing a major role in setting this up with them. And they said that Europe had been a model. It was that Javier Solana had brought democracy to Spain. He was an active Marxist in Spain. And he left kind of smelling, leaving the government smelling like a skunk, and he walked out smelling like a rose, taking the new head of job as head of NATO, which he had been the foremost opponent to in the past. And they talked very unabashedly. In fact, the word world government was used by Javier Solana, and then he started out saying, well, global governance is an awful term, but it's necessary. And then he, in that same speech, which is available for download on the Internet, there's a transcript on the Internet, Dr. Stan, that I recommend that if people can get the tape, and if you can't, I've saved the file, and by golly, we can copy it on disk. But if you, I've saved the MP3 file, and I'm listening to it on my podcast player. But he said that this was, that his main concern was creating unity between the cultures and civilizations, and that was his code for alliance of civilizations, which is their major new world religion thrust. And they are working on that. They plan to have all those mechanisms in place also by 2009, when religious schools and churches all over the globe had to register with the United Nations. An appointment has already been made of the High Representative for the Alliance of Civilizations, and it's, I believe his name is Sampaio, S-A-M-P-A-I-O, who's a former Prime Minister of Portugal. And he also, like Dr. Solana, who was an active Marxist until 1979, was a Spanish socialist. He comes from almost the same group of people, the same attitudes, the same anti-clerical attitudes, the same mindset.
Now, of course,
and they intend to regulate religious curriculum all over the world.
Now, you were mentioning that Strobe Talbot was working here. For our listeners, Strobe Talbot Rhodes Scholar, member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Oh, yes.
A former, of course, Undersecretary of State, a member of the Trilateral Commission, one of the major movers and shakers towards world government. This is the common denominator between the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the Club of Rome and the Masons and Skull and Bones.
No. Can I tell you something even more frightening about that?
Oh, well, you can, but just a moment. Let's get through this break, and then I'll let you begin to help us tie it together. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Constance.
Okay, in looking at this, I noticed some curious developments that tied in with some other disturbing things that have happened over the years. And there were parallel developments both sides of the Atlantic to swing the masses into step, as Alice Bailey had put it. And on the other side of the Atlantic, they were busy organizing something called the International Institute for Strategic Studies, IISS, and it was put together by a Sir. There was a man, Anthony Buzzard, I believe his name was, Sir Buzzard. It was put together by Norman Grubb, and the third man that put it together was Dennis Healy, who was one of the primary organizers of the Bilderbergers. And they organized this group, and then they received. He wrote about it. The book was described in a book called "Trips to Power" by Norman Grubb, or not Norman Grubb, Sir Kenneth Grubb, who was the head of British intelligence. But Sir Kenneth Grubb is the brother. Was the brother? They're both dead now, I understand. Of Norman Grubb. He was the founder of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, which is the group that gave me some very, very, very ugly opposition to my work against the New Age movement, and I didn't know why. When I first started, I thought it would be very simple. Christians versus lions, good versus bad. And it wasn't that easy. And I had noticed right at the very start that Paulus Press and InterVarsity had a co-publishing relationship, and they were both putting out heavy-duty propaganda for the New World Order. And Paulus Press was reaching a Catholic audience, and InterVarsity was reaching a Protestant audience. And later on, when I was finding this, I stumbled into a book called Once Taught, No Escape. The book was by Norman Grubb, and the founder of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. And he said in there that at one point he had lost his faith completely, and he didn't regain it until he discovered the great mystics, and that he had read William James and the varieties of religious experience, and he said this is what helped bring him back. Now, James was also an active theosophist. And then
hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment as we bring other stations on board here. All right, go ahead, Constance. Now, who are you specifically speaking about? Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and get your blog or your webpage out so people know how to get in touch with you.
Dr. Stan, I have several ways people can reach me. I have a blog spot on the internet. It's worldwideweb.tumblr.blogspot.com.
One more time, please.
www.tumblr.blogspot.com. Now, I also, in addition to that, I do frequent columns for newswithviews.com, and I am told that a week ago Sunday, an article that I wrote on many of these developments, which is up on the internet and can be pulled down easily, called Curious Triangles, Javier Solana, Paul Martin, and Maury Strong, maybe in a different order. But that was made the cover story in the Canada Free Press.
And then a couple of days ago, another story was. And if you go to newswithviews.com, or there's a link to newswithviews.com from my station. And I'm also now doing radio broadcasts myself on themicroeffect.com on Saturday afternoons. But it's Saturday morning, California time. So there are several ways people can reach me. And then there's my email, which is cumby@yahoo.com.
All right, fine. In fact, Barry Shama said to say hello to you. He's going to be with you tomorrow.
He's going to be with me tomorrow. Yes, he is.
Yeah, well, he's our next guest for the next hour. Will you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Tell him to be alert and awake for tomorrow.
All right.
Okay. And as soon as your voice heals, I want you on.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you go right ahead. Now pick the story up where we interrupt
okay.
you.
Back to the InterVarsity connection. This was curious, and I started following, and I've picked up more books by him because I was curious because he had a theology he was recommending called Union Life, and basically it was the newest revelation of God was to believe that we were one with God and God was one with us. Basically, we were gods ourselves. And that's what Union Life was all about. And it looked like very much like theosophy to me. And it's hard to know. Everybody's been so exposed to this. But then I found some of his books where he was out and out recommending some of the worst of the Russian theosophists, one in particular, P.D. Uspensky, who worked with George Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff had been a roommate at one point of Joseph Stalin, and he was had a particular virulent brand of the New Age. In fact, it was so bad that when James Webb, the occult scholar who wrote a trilogy of books, The Occult Underground, The Occult Establishment, and then he wrote a book on the Gurdjieffian crowd called The Harmonious Circle, and he said he had never seen such a pattern of deliberate disinformation as had been put out by the Gurdjieff crowd. In fact, Webb, who was not a believer, I believe he was an atheist, was so depressed after he wrote the third book, he decided there was absolutely no hope for the world and that he wanted to check out of it before these folks had their way and took over again. And he unfortunately took his own life. He was a brilliant scholar on the area. But I saw some of those references that were clearly quoted and quite a trail of mischief. Well, then I found out that his brother on the other side of the Atlantic had worked to set up both the World Council of Churches and to set up this International Institute of Strategic Studies, which incidentally is one of Javier Solana's chief think tanks today. And they had received generous funding from the, I believe, both the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation in the United States.
And they see, this is one of the things that people don't understand, is the great tax-exempt foundations have been funding this occult movement. And the Rockefellers and the family itself, many people have been involved in this occult movement, as was Henry Ford, as was Andrew Carnegie. And until you begin to understand that these men, I believe, receive their great wealth because of their connection with the occult, and using and tapping into the secret occult power, and, of course, then they were able to use these vast funds to fund this world occult movement.
There's been an awful lot of that. People have said, where did the money come from? And then people said, well, it takes a lot of money to fight them. And that's been one place where Christians have been rendered so vulnerable on this, because people sometimes have thought they had to make common cause with other occult interests to fight evil. And Unification Church, which is in every last New Age directory I own, is a cooperating group where the head of their political action group, PASA, admitted to me. He said, yes, we work with Benjamin Krem and Tara Center. I had mentioned Benjamin Krem to him. I had never mentioned Tara Center, which indeed was one of Benjamin Krem's front organizations. He said, but we don't all agree on who that new Christ is. And I said, yes, but you all agree on who he isn't, don't you? And I said, that, my friend, is the test of Antichrist, not who's jockeying for power.
No, but you speak of the Unification Church, you're talking about Reverend Moon.
Yes, but there have been just shamefully, so many Christians have been compromised on this and have been silent on the New Age movement because they accepted thousands, even millions of dollars in largesse from Unification Church, and it didn't help spread the gospel. It silenced the warning.
Yes, what a tragedy, you know, because it's awfully hard to turn down $1 million. I haven't been offered yet. I hope I would have the courage to turn it down.
Well, I had an argument with one person whose name would surprise everybody, and I'm not going to say it on the air, but we had an argument about it. His nickel, extremely prominent, and he finally said it was okay to take Unification Church money to build the kingdom of God on earth. And I said to him, I said, God does not need 25 cents worth of Unification Church money to build his kingdom. And basically there were penalties in the scripture. You were not to go to Egypt for help against Assyria.
Well, I'm sure that this was not very popular, but I'm sure you're absolutely right. And I believe that we've accomplished what God wants us to accomplish, and our job is to be dependent upon our Lord rather than think we're going to be able to do this all on our own.
Right, and then I've been kind of surprised because if anybody's ever operated on the shoestring on this thing, it's been me over the years. And sometimes the truth standing all by itself, God's perfectly capable of getting his word out. And that was, I was kind of surprised at some of the opportunities that came. I was contacted by Israel National Radio to do a program right at the first of the year, the end of the first full day of the first full business day in Israel, January 2nd. It was the stroke of midnight on January 1st, at the end of January 1st. And I had an hour to talk to Israel about the Alliance of Civilizations. They contacted me. It didn't cost me a nickel. And then February 18th, they contacted me, and they wanted me to discuss Javier Solana and the European Union, which I did. I was told one interviewer would be hostile to me, but interestingly, I listened to the tape later, which was available for download on the Internet, and she was not. In fact, she quoted the book of Daniel when I was done and said, isn't it wonderful, you know, thanks to the Internet, that it was, we were told in the scriptures that travel and knowledge would increase, and now thanks to the Internet, we can get somebody who has made this a part of their life, this study a part of their life, and now we're all informed. And I thought only through God could an opportunity like that have come, and it didn't take anything. I didn't have to spend millions. And then we have people like you. You've just done such tremendous, tremendous work educating and warning people, and Joe McNeil and so many others, and I know you've sunk everything into it.
Well, I notice that God does provide, but he never provides too much. He provides enough, and that's what...
Enough to keep us trusting in him.
Right, and what we do is we don't try to expand, and we figure if God wants us to expand, he'll provide. What he's given us, outlets on some 60, almost 60 different outlets every month, where we praise him for the opportunity to speak to people all over the world and be able to bring programs such as yours, because this truly is a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield.
I heard a song when I was on the road, and it was one day when I was in the middle of something discouraging, and I don't know anything about the people who were singing, and it was on a television hostess who was not particularly a religious person. In fact, there were times I wondered if she wasn't tilting New Age. But this particular day, she had a Christian on, and she was singing loud and clear, and it struck me, and I wished I had a recording of it, and it was going, "Fear not, behold the battle, for the battle, or the behold the, fear not, behold the battle, if I recall correctly, for the victory, the battle is not yours, but the Lord. Behold the victory, the battle is not yours, but the Lord." And I think that's it. It's the Lord's battle, and we're privileged if we can play a small part in it.
Amen to that, certainly. Well, anyway, because I think it's so vitally important that people begin to understand that it has nothing to do with Republicans or Democrats or right or left or conservatives or liberal or... and so many of these different organizations out here are simply fronts for this power, and most of the people involved in them have no idea what it's all about.
And it's initiates, adepts, and masters, and people come in at all different levels of understanding. And then Marilyn Ferguson said, once they reach the stage of meditation, and that's what The Secret and everything else is about, to get them to that stage of meditation, it's like a sign I once saw in a restaurant, you don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps. And basically, nobody in their right mind would understand this, so there's a huge emphasis in the New Age on disengaging from what they call your analytical left brain and switching to what they call their spiritual right brain and going at things from what they call a, quote, meditative method. And once they reach that stage, Marilyn Ferguson said, that this, from there on, and Alice Bailey wrote, once they reached that stage, all the paths thereupon and thereafter were the same. So people come in from different directions. I actually have a 1903 book from a congress, a theosophical congress in Amsterdam, and Madame Montessori was in attendance, if I recall correctly. Rudolf Steiner, the founder of Rudolf Waldorf Education, was in attendance. Many famous bubblegum card theosophists and famous names even to this day. And there was a fellow by the name of I.G. Hooper, and he wrote about the shape of the new religion that was to come and then also how this would be spread. And he told the instructors of theosophists that no matter how distasteful it would be, that they should go into the churches, learn their language, learn the Bible, and then learn how to translate theosophical teachings into biblical verses that the Christians could understand. And the direction that has been taken in the emerging church is almost word for word the same as what I.D. Hooper laid out in 1903. And it's rather frightening to think that there have been several generations, and my historical study of it shows they were preparing starting in 1892 for a new Messiah, one they cheerfully admitted was neither Jesus nor Jewish, and one they then believed starting in 1910 would be a young man by the name of Jiddu Krishnamurti, that they were shamelessly proselytizing those circles as many as they could, and actually succeeded in making converts in some Christian circles. And then, when that didn't succeed, then the next thing was to soften people, either to not oppose Nazism or be part of it, and the moral rearmament phase came in, Frank Buckman. And that, again, it was a huge, huge movement. They almost put it over. They were going to rearm morally at the very time that the nation should have been arming physically. And almost preparation for the war was bypassed. He wrote that Himmler was a really great guy and it said some positive things about Hitler, and then later they circulated things that Hitler was against him and some alleged pamphlets that they had been put out against moral rearmament. Huge, huge thrust. And after a while, instead of just being very moral, very Christian, here they were bowing down to Buddha, bowing down to Krishna. That was exposed, and that one didn't get off the ground, but it was a huge, huge mass movement at one point. Huge facilities even in Michigan on the Upper Peninsula. And then all at once that went down into oblivion. And then in 1975, for Alice Bailey, they were to start publicity for the next round, the next move of the their expected Messiah. And they were going to expect their new Christ in the spring of 1982. They were exposed, and they kind of went slinking back into their holes. One prominent leader, Donald Keyes, who headed World Federalists, has scarcely been heard of, and he was a major figure at that point in time. And now they're back on the march again, and many of the same personalities that we looked at in 1982 are out there and about now. Are they going to pull it off this time or not? I don't know. If Jesus didn't know the hour, certainly Satan doesn't know it either, but he certainly is making lots of attempts. But this much I do know, if God is ready, we had better be.
Well, of course, they certainly try to get into the church to get people to change their form of prayer. And, of course, they will try to get Christians into the yoga breathing exercises.
Yeah.
Breath prayers, things of this sort.
Yeah.
Christian mysticism, walking the labyrinth, the centering prayer. And, of course, all of this is to alter, put you into an alpha state where, of course, the demonic forces can come in and take over.
Exactly. It's to detach you from your rational mind, detach you from the Holy Spirit, and leave you open for other spirits to come in and form the impressions. And Dr. Stan, the scriptures say no man has at any time seen God. Moses came as close to it as anybody came, apart from when Jesus was here. Moses was so bright that his visage was so bright with that very limited encounter that his face had to be veiled so the Israelites weren't blinded looking upon him. And God gave the Israelites a list of forbidden spiritual practices. There shall not be found among you. And those were repeated many times. Deuteronomy 18, Leviticus, Isaiah. There were stern, stern warnings against it. And what happens is people get into this, they cross the line, and then they have the very impressions that God is trying to protect them from. And something very bright shows up to them, and we know that when Satan appears to you, as the scripture said, it will be as an angel of light. And this thing shows up to them, and they can't explain it. It's greater than anything they've ever known. They're tapped into something that's so magnificent to them. And if you haven't seen the sunlight, a flashlight would look mighty impressive if that was the only light you have. They really have no standard of comparison.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, there's a great deception going on today, and unfortunately, most of our ministers are not warning their parishioners. Now, some of them are, and I know in our town that several of the ministers have spoken out against Rhonda Byrne's program of The Secret. But this is really sweeping through much of the Christian church today, and it's certainly one of the most dangerous movements I've encountered in the last 50 years.
Yes, and it's very, very aggressive proselytizing now as well, and they're spreading it aggressively now. We also have some unprecedented opportunities to get the word out. The internet has been a tremendous tool, and they'd love to take it away from us as fast as they can. They're already talking about restructuring the internet. The same folks talking about the global governance are also having seminars and conferences on the new internet. And they're very worried about the YouTube effect. Javier Solana said with some dismay that now anybody with a camera or a phone can literally disrupt plans. And pointing out the camera, a phone picture of the execution of Saddam Hussein, and which he had referred to in his March 21st speech at the Brookings Institution. And I'm reminded of a song that used to sing in church when I was a little girl, "Work for the night is coming when you can work no more." And I think that's what we have to do. We just have to keep it our work. We should let God worry about the results. Don't even worry about the results. We may not see the results of everything we're doing, but just keep it our work until the time comes when God says, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And I think our attitude has to be, and when we're afraid on this thing, first of all, God's going to give us the courage that we need to deal with this, and we're ready for it. And he'll give us the strength that we need. Second thing, I think, like godly Queen Esther, when she was worried about going in to see her husband because he hadn't extended the scepter, or he hadn't called her in 30 days, and if he didn't extend the scepter, she would die. And she said she was going to go with her maidens and fast for a period of time, and that Mordecai and all the Jewish people should do likewise. And she said then she would go in and see him. She said, "If I perish, I perish." And that's the kind of attitude I think that God expects us to have. We have to put our trust in him. And like Job said, "Of all the worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God with my own eyes and not with the eyes of another." And that's the kind of trust we have to have. Jesus said, "Fear not those who can kill the body, and thereafter do no more to you. Fear those who can kill the body."
Constance, we're going to have to interrupt you. Well, our guest has been Constance Cumbie, and it's been fascinating, and we hope many of you want to get the tape of our program, because we do talk through the breaks. But Constance has pointed out, and I believe this fully, we are called upon to do our best at this time and to expose this vast movement with all of its spiritual ramifications. And the battle is not ours, the battle is the Lord's. We're called upon to do one thing, and that is our best. God bless you, Constance.
Thank you so very much for being with us. Okay, thank you. Good night.
God bless. Okay. All right, that was Constance Cumbie, and I just hate to have to interrupt her there because she has so much to say. But this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really depend upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America, indeed across the world, trying to let people understand the history of this movement. And this idea of the world government did not come from George Herbert Walker Bush. He was simply actually expressing the views of Alice Bailey in her writings that were channeled to her by a demonic spirit named Joao Cool in a series of books. And, of course, they're available from the Lucius Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House previously. And if you'd like to get more information on that, why get in touch with our ministry, understand that there's this vast movement. We can identify a few of the organizations, but this permeates every aspect of our society, the left, the right, but even that, more than that, the Christian church today. Well, Sydney, we hope many of you would want to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, or certainly our DVD on the by that title, my talk, The Forbidden Secret. We have a great four-tape set with Constance Cumbie. Four tapes or four CDs, which cover a great deal of what we've covered this evening. And then, of course, we have a DVD with Constance, the talk she gave last November when she was with us. It's called The Emergence. And what is The Emergence? The emergence is the coming forward of the Antichrist. And I don't think it's that far away. I think it's going to follow the very terrible things will happen if we do go to war with Iran. And I believe that the war is imminent, whether we're talking months or years, I can't be certain. But anyway, I think that we're in for some very difficult times in the coming months, at least according to the information we're getting. Under any circumstances, we hope many of you will give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Watch my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, Forbidden Secret, Chris Pinto's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone, the DVDs, and then, of course, Constance Cumbie's The Emergence and her four-tape set entitled just the wisdom of Constance Cumbie, a four-tape or four-CD set. Then please go to our website and pull down our newsletters. We do have a set of pamphlets called The Occult Hierarchy. They are compiled of, maybe about 15 of my newsletters and three pamphlets. It will introduce you to this whole other world. It's not imaginary. It's real. You encounter it every day. They hide their emblems in plain sight. You see them, but you don't recognize them, and you will not, because your mind has been blinded. We have a great book by Kathy Burns, Dr. Kathy Burns, entitled Masonic and Occult Symbols, and you'll see hundreds of the occult symbols that are available, and you see every day. That's Masonic and Occult Symbols. And so much more. If you'd like more information, you may call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our ministers and for our leaders. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And we'll be back here in just a couple of moments with Will Perry Shamish, another exciting program. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, the views of Barry Shamish. And Barry's is a investigative reporter who's been working over in Israel for many years. Because of threats on his life, he's had to move to the United States, and of course, their loss is our gain, because now Barry is appearing as a fairly regular guest here on Radio Liberty and bringing us up to date on the history of Israel, the various characters and the personalities that are in key positions of certainly running Israel today. And if you ever saw a sorry lot of people whose lawyer was not to Israel, it's the group that we have in power in Israel today, Olmert, Barak, and certainly Perez. But with that as a background, Barry, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
You go right ahead.
Well, I was going to talk about the Holocaust today in a modern sense. There was very serious news in the last week and a half, that no one paid attention to, and I think you should. If you care about Israel, I think it's time you understood that the Holocaust is all tied up in the country in ways that you can't possibly understand. Those who have read the Jews, mostly Orthodox, who have explained their horrible experiences trying to save the Jews of Europe with the Jewish Agency of Jerusalem, which was supporting, apparently, they were working hand-in-hand with the Nazis. The famous book, because it was such a famous author, of course, is Perfidy by Ben Heck, but there's even equal books describing this horrible phenomenon of the Jewish Agency not stepping in to save Jews, and quite the opposite, doing everything possible to wipe out the Jews of Europe, because they got the Jews they wanted. They got the German Jews. They got them since 1932. There were like 250 organizations representing German Jewry. In 1934, after something called the transfer agreement was signed, only labor Zionism was allowed to represent all the Jews. They got about 80,000 Jews out of Germany, and then the British shut up the borders in 1939 with the famous white paper, which trapped all the Jews in Europe to be massacred in the Holocaust. And the British knew what they were doing. What Israel was founded to be was not a shelter for the Jews. What Israel was founded to be was a new Judaism based on German Jewish stock. And whoever would survive the Holocaust would come to Israel, their shelter, and learn that, in fact, it was not God who was running the show. It was Shabtai Tzvi and Jacob Frank, leaders of a revolution that in the 17th century, more than half the Jews of the world were accepted Shabtai Tzvi as their Messiah. And he taught a Judaism that was opposite what we call the Torah Judaism. He taught that the Torah was absolutely wrong, that the Torah was right in its opposite sense.
Hold that, we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, I guess it's Barry Shamish. What he's really talking about is the Sabbatean set. Would that be right, Barry?
Yes, or the Frankist. Right. A lot of people refer to Jacob Frank as more powerful. He 80 years later got European Jews to form into the Sabbateans that literally run the Council on Foreign Relations. They are not Jews. They are half Jews. They are people who have apparently become Gentiles. Well, let's just look at who the Rothschilds sent to America to corrupt the state through the Civil War, for instance. You have people like August Belmont and John Jacob Astor and Jacob Schiff. All these people today are not Jewish. August Belmont took about 1 second to become a Protestant. When you see the Belmont stakes being run, nobody realizes that it's entirely Jewish in its beginnings, but they hide behind whatever religion they choose. Often it's Judaism. In the case of a John Kerry or an whose brother is fully Jewish now, and who lo and behold we discover his father was a Jew in the last election campaign. Well, it is just a long list of people. Madeleine Albright, who doesn't realize that her whole family is Jewish. She thinks she was born a Protestant. There are people who hide behind different religions. There are people who are actual Jews, at least they claim to be. But these are the Sabbateans. Now, one of these people, the family, the Bronfman family, they may not go praying every weekend at a Sabbatean retreat somewhere, but they are certainly, certainly taking advantage of dead Jews. Now, I'm going to begin with a scandal that actually made Edgar Bronfman resign as president of the World Jewish Congress, which his father, Samuel, founded, named himself president, named his sons president, where Edgar Bronfman was caught by someone who is, you know, I don't know if I've met him, but he's written to me many times. He's on my email list. He's in my news group. His name is Izzy Liebler. He exposed from Israel terrible financial finaglings going on inside the World Jewish Congress, and lo and behold, Edgar had to resign. He actually resigned from his father's organization just this week. He quit. Now, who does he replace? Oops.
Go right ahead.
I hear the music.
Go right ahead.
All right. Now, what happened with Edgar Bronfman, first of all, is he sued the Swiss banks and won. He won a judgment of $6.5 billion. This was, 5 years ago, let's say. Now, in that time...
No, but I think it's important that people know he sued on behalf of the victims of the Holocaust, the idea being that the people whose families had lost money in Swiss banks during the Holocaust, now they were going to get their money back, or at least part of it, and they were going to be compensated for the loss all these years. So go ahead.
Well, it's some loss. I mean, $6.5 billion is even divided amongst all the Holocaust survivors. Somebody's going to get something. But nobody's seen a penny. And he's been blaming the Swiss for the banks for not releasing the names. And what the fact of the matter is, he hasn't tried to get rid of the money. He's got the money. $6.5 billion was awarded to the Bronfman family. Now, he is forced to resign by scandal, terrible scandal, his financial officers stealing big money. So what does he do? He names the people who are going to carry on the traditions of his grandfather, Samuel Bronfman. Keep in mind that Edgar Bronfman is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and that is very important, because who does he name as the new president? Why, it's Ronald Lauder. Ronald Lauder of the Council on Foreign Relations. People, go to your internet and look up CFR list and just You'll see I'm not wrong about these names, all right? You'll find Edgar Bruffin, and you'll find Ronald Lauder. Ronald Lauder was supposedly the right-wing philanthropist who was backing Ehud Olmert. This has been going on for the past decade. He was backing Olmert. And, of course, Olmert became prime minister, and you can be sure that Lauder played a major role in this. Now, I don't know if he knew how they got rid of Sharon. I don't know if he knew that Peres killed him. I don't, Shimon, of course. I don't know if he's that involved in the finaglings that have turned Israel into a mafia state. But one thing is for sure, he sure pushed Olmert into the prime ministership of Israel. He is now the president of the World Jewish Congress, the same World Jewish Congress that sued the Swiss banks and won. Now, that's the president. Now, who is who does Edgar Bronfman name as the financial officer? Why, it's his son, Matt. Now, of Matt, what we know is that he bought Israel Discount Bank. Now, what does that mean if you're an Israeli? Well, if you get killed in an upcoming Holocaust, your money's going to go to the Bronfman family. Matt Bronfman has got the Israel Discount Bank, so the country's largest bank. He'll get your money, and he won't give it to anyone else. You can be sure of that. This is repeating itself, this horrible, horrible fact of the Holocaust. And the money's stolen, the money's recovered, and it's repeating itself. Somebody is expecting another Holocaust in Israel. The Bronfman family are expecting to take the money again. This time they don't have to sue the Swiss banks. This time they don't have to claim that the Swiss banks aren't releasing the names and therefore we have to hold on to the money. No. They just bought Israel Discount Bank, Matt Bronfman, and he is now the financial treasurer of the World Jewish Congress. These people are so corrupt. They're so deeply corrupt. They're living off Jewish lives. At the dead of the Holocaust, the Bronfman family are $6.5 billion richer. And when the dead of Israel start rolling in, their coffins start rolling into the ground, it's going to be Matt Bronfman, that empire that keeps and collects their money. It is just a horrid, horrid travesty what's going on in Israel today. The same crooks benefiting from the Holocaust will benefit from the downfall of Israel. And I'm here sitting in the middle of Florida watching all this happen, and it seems that nobody else is even seeing the logic of this. What they discovered in Israel is that there are 250,000 Holocaust survivors and their families living in abject poverty. And believe me, Israel, the economy is just dreadful. So many people have tried to make a living there and failed. A million people have left. Well, Bank Leumi, the third largest bank, did something in a way fantastic, in a way not so fantastic. They announced this week, or maybe 10 days ago, that they will be giving 200 million shekels, about $45 million, will be given to the families of Holocaust victims who opened accounts in Bank Leumi, and now, after 70-odd years of holding on to the accounts, they're going to give up $45 million to their families. Number one, I wonder if the interest I wonder if this covers the interest of 70 years of deposits. Okay, that's the first thing. They're cheating the families raw. But somehow or another, there was enough pressure in Israel by the Holocaust survivors' families. Not survivors. These are victims. They're not survivors. They're dead. They died in the Holocaust. There was enough pressure that Bank Leumi determined that, okay, we'll give 200 million shekels to shut them up. Well, all I can say is after 70 years, I would not have wanted an account in Bank Leumi, if that's all the money that's been accrued in 70 million years. But that horrible, horrible scenario of the World Jewish Congress and Edgar Bronfman giving his the presidency after a terrible financial scandal, which Izzy Liebler, my friend who has bought all my books and has communicated with me for years, exposed the whole thing. And, well, the new president is Ehud Olmert, backer, Ronald Lauder of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, I hope I made that clear. It's quite a story, and it's a bit complicated. But I hope I made that clear.
And, of course, it was the reason that Bronfman resigned was the fact it was brought out that he had kept all the $6 billion for himself, or was it something else?
No, the reason was his financial officer, what was his name, Israel, you know, I forgot his name, and I'm sorry about that. If you want to look it up, folks, just go on the Internet again and look up World Jewish Congress resignations, and you'll get the whole story. No, his financial officer stole millions of bucks in the last few years, and this is what Izzy Liebler exposed to the whole world, and this is why the World Jewish Congress had a resignation of Edgar Bronfman. But it doesn't matter. He gets to keep the $6.5 billion. That's still in his pocket, and it's never going to leave.
Well, isn't there any way that the survivors can sue him to try to get the money back?
No. Of course not. They will die. Again, the money is not of the survivors. It's of the families of the dead.
Right.
Okay? Now, the dead cannot sue him. And the families don't even know if in fact, they have money in Swiss banks. Unless the banks release the account numbers, not numbers, account names, the families don't know what was inside the banks. Only the Bronfmans know that.
Well, I'm surprised that the banks would have paid off that over $6 billion. You know, if they didn't have those names, that they should have been made available before they released the money.
Well, Bronfman is claiming that the nasty old Swiss banks are at fault, and he's just going to have to hold on to everything because they're not releasing the names. It's a scam. It's a horrible scam. But keep in mind, that son has got Israel Discount Bank. And when Israel goes, you're going to have the same victims, and they won't know where the money is, and they won't know, but, oh, my goodness. When you even think about safety deposit boxes and savings accounts, how would the families know what was inside the banks if you don't release every penny of who had what? How would the families know? And that's the game they're playing. And I repeat, somebody knows Israel is going to die. And that's somebody, certainly Matt Bronfman. He gets the largest bank in Israel, and the same process starts all over again. Look, I can go, I think I may, if there's time, with the latest scandal on Olmert and the fact that he tried to use his influence to help his crooked friend Daniel Abraham of the Council on Foreign Relations. Folks, the two people that Omer tried to help buy Bank Leumi are Daniel Abraham of the Council on Foreign Relations and Frank Lowy, who owned the real estate, the shopping concourse of the World Trade Center, and was paid magnificently when it went down. Now, this is one of the horrible arguments I have against Omer, that he is so tied up with the 9/11. That his former partner accounted for the Likud, Menachem Atzmon, was the CEO of the company that provided security for Logan and New York airports. I mean, that's not... Look, he sat in jail for massive corruption, and Olmert didn't. When he got out in 96, where did he get the money to buy this kind of a firm offering security to two of the largest airports in the United States? Obviously, he was paid off for keeping his mouth shut, I would assume. But nonetheless, this is Olmert, and I do hear the music now.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Barry, go right ahead there.
Now, the next And I'll be writing about this this week. The story has to be told, I guess. The next story is Abraham Burg. Now, Abraham Burg is the son of Joseph Burg, who was the longest sitting member of the Knesset from 1948 until, well into the 80s. Now, Abraham Burg, just so you know, was going to be the leader of the Labor Party. At least the Americans wanted it that way. When he visited Washington, the Clinton administration put him into a limousine and gave him a first-class convoy of limousines and motorcycles all the way to the White House. They were building him up big time. Now, Abraham Burg wrote a book, and it came out in France, I'm not sure, beginning of last week. Abraham Burg took out French citizenship. He is now a French citizen. He quit Israeli politics a few years ago to become a successful French businessman, and God knows how that's done, all right? I can quit whatever I want and go to France. I'm not going to become a successful French businessman. Obviously, he had a certain amount of help. But he tells the world that being a Jew is wrong. He tells the world to take out... every Israeli has got to take out citizenship of another country. For an Israeli to be a Jew is wrong. Now, I have his quotes, and I'm going to write about that this week. That he actually says that it's wrong to be an Israeli Jew, and, well, what can you say? I mean, he actually took up French citizenship and wrote a book about this. Now, there's something you should know about what he wrote about his father, and I want you to know that it really explains an awful lot of things. Now, I've written about the horrible, horrible treatment of the Sephardi Jews, and I was part of it. Because of my Rabin book in Israel, I was invited to represent all kinds of groups. And this is where I started getting my information. I would meet people, and they would call me up. Now, amongst the groups, really the most important of the groups that I met were the Yemenite children, represented by Rabbi Uzi Meshulam. I went to his prison. Uzi Meshulam wanted to know what happened. He did know what happened. I'll explain that as well, maybe. 4,500 Yemenite children disappeared from their parents' homes when they arrived in Israel from 1948 to 1956. They were babies. These babies were shipped to America. They were used in horrible atomic experiments. It's a complicated issue. The fact is that I met Rabbi Meshulam in prison. And boy, did they have him in prison, but good. To get in the prison was a headache. But to finally get down to his cell, down one flight of stairs, underground, left, right, till I finally made it there, nobody could escape where he was. Now, they put me in a private cell, and in comes Rabbi Meshulam.
Okay, I want you to hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here.
Gotcha.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry Shamish is talking about his experience with this very famous rabbi who's been put in prison because he champions the cause of 4,500 Yemen children. These were children from Jewish families from Yemen, who were used for atomic experiments. And, of course, because the rabbi had spoken out against it, why he's in prison and Barry's going to visit him. Why would they do that? Because the last thing they could afford is for the people to know about the terrible macabre experiments they had carried out on the Yemeni children and the Sephardic children. You pick up the story there.
Well, the key of the issue was that Shimon Peres was head of the Israeli Atomic Commission, Energy Commission. He was in charge of sending them to America. See, the Americans didn't really understand the full effects of radiation in 1948. they needed guinea pigs, and they had them. They used in Georgia and Texas, they used patients from they used the mentally retarded, and they used poor blacks, and it was a scandal in America. It was discovered, the experiments were stopped. They needed new guinea pigs, and Paris, as Atomic Energy Commissioner, said, "Okay, we'll give you the guinea pigs, but we want to know how to make a bomb." And there was all kinds of finagling going on. Paris wanted a bomb. The Americans could offer it to him. He could offer real live experiments. And this led to the biggest experiment of all. And by the way, Paris may be present today, but when the real truth comes out about the experiments, the radiation, the ringworm children, it's called, that they took 108,000 Sephardi children, an entire generation of Sephardi children, brought to Israel, and they used 7 American Army X-ray machines to blast these poor kids with the equivalent of 35,000 times the amount of permitted X-rays through their heads. Now, believe me, they know about this in Israel. You have 6,000 die as a result of these experiments. There was a movie made called The Ringworm Children. It won the Haifa Film Festival Best Film Award again about 6 years ago. It was shown on Israel TV once. I was very fortunate. I caught it. It was terrifying. And then I spoke to the director. I phoned him up. And I got to know him. He knew my stuff. It was David Belhassen. He had read my Rabin book. We got along beautifully. And it's all true. They were doing Nazi experiments of the Sephardim. Now...
But what did they do to the Yemeni children?
Same thing. They just did it in America.
All right, fine. Now, is that movie available on DVD, that's what you're talking about?
I have directed people to David Belhassen, is his name. He is the director of the movie in Israel. Go on the Internet, look up The Ringworm Children, and anyone who really wants this movie... it's been shown at film festivals in America, Jewish film festivals. If it's really important to you, I can get his number and help you find it. I have people, I have Yemenite children, I have the children of the children who have been phoning me all the way from Israel this year, 3 of them, wanting to know what they can do, and they're working with David Belhassen, and I can get you his number.
All right, fine. But basically, what was the end result? I mean, how much damage was done to their brains?
That the Sephardim, for one thing, the Moroccans, by the way, who were the majority of the Sephardim until 1956, they were the majority of all Sephardim coming to the country. You look at their hair, and the women who had beautiful hair and their daughters have beautiful hair have very, very sparse hair. And they colored with henna, and their whole lives reflect that hair. These people have literally have been Israel's poorest class. They didn't make them stupid, but they made them a lot less intelligent than what they were before this experiment. The Moroccans are the lower class of Israel.
All right, because we know the radiation out of the brains of children will knock down their IQ.
Oh, believe me, the Moroccans have done very well in France. And the people in Israel will tell you, well, the French got the best Moroccans. Nonsense. They got Moroccans that were blasted with 35,000 times the permitted amount of radiation. Now, the reason that I'm bringing up this is the Minister of the Interior was Joseph Burg. Now, every time
hold that thought, we'll be right back here, Barry. All right, Barry, you were just saying the Minister of the Interior was Joseph Bork.
Joseph Bork was in 1940. These Sephardim calling me, they're all women, and two of them have birth defects. It actually passes from generation to generation. They have growths now. Their mothers are in hospital. There's a special Knesset committee that's supposed to compensate these people for the horrible experiments on ringworm, and they've given away nothing. But the key of the matter is, during this time, the Minister of the Interior for the country was Joseph Bork. Now, every Sephardic leader, including Rabbi Meshulam, who today is a zombie, by the way, they did horrible things to him in prison, terrible things. No one can explain why he can't rise from his sofa. He was the strongest man. When I met him, he had a handshake. I've never felt such a strong handshake. Today, he just cannot rise. His son is in Canada. He was warned to get out of there in a mighty big hurry. This was on Arut Sheva, Israel National News. They did an interview with his son hiding in Canada, who was told by the Israeli authorities, if you don't get out, we're not responsible for what happens to you. That family has been wrecked, absolutely wrecked. And all he wanted to do was find out the truth. He wanted to unite these Yemenite children with their biological parents. But that would have led to Joseph Bork. That would have led to Avraham Bork. And that would have led to Shimon Peres. Everyone said Joseph Bork was the man, the brains behind this horrible operation. Now, I have trouble, and a lot of people have trouble, because he was a rabbi, or at least he was represented the National Religious Party, which meant that he was extremely religious. Well, what could a religious man be doing? How could he do such an operation? And lo and behold, well, this is what Avraham Bork said in his interview. He said, my father's memory shaped my book because my father was the official representative to the Jewish people from Germany. I said, oh, no. This is it. This is the Frankist. This is a Sabbatean Jew, and he was the one who was arranging the
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is simply saying that it was the father of Avraham Bork who was actually responsible for these experiments on the Sephardic children. And that was over 100,000 Sephardic children. And then, of course, the Yemenite children, 4,500, were taken to America to be experimented on, and they just simply blasted their heads with all sorts of radiation, destroyed their brains, destroyed their hair. A number of them have died. And, of course, Barry feels that the man in charge was really one of these Sabbateans. Was that right?
Well, he was certainly the German representative to Israel. I didn't know that. Until Avraham Bork said, I don't know if anyone knows that. He was Germany's representative in Israel, and for all those years, they were doing the Nazi experiments on the Sephardim. It was Joseph Bork, who was interior minister. He was the one who registered every person who came in the country. That's what the interior... There was a lot of immigration from the Sephardic nations then. The Zionists were causing terrible anti-Semitism in the Sephardic nations. Their leaders were bribed by taking over Jewish assets. They got rich. They came to Israel, and they came to Israel to be experimented on. What a nightmare that country must have been in the early 50s if you were Sephardic. What a horrible nightmare that country was. Now, I'm going to interrupt because I want people to meet with me. I'm going to be in Denver on July 14th, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Here's the phone number of the American Freedom Network. is 303-654-9924. That's 303-654-9924. I'll stay with you as long as you want to talk. I never just do a speech and walk off. I'll talk to you about this. Then I'm going to New York. I'm going to be at the Seaview Jewish Center. And if you're in the New York region or you can make it to Brooklyn, the number of the synagogue there is 718-251-1900. That's 718-251-1900. I want to talk to people about this. We've got a problem in Israel today. You know, when Borg is warning people, Israelis not to identify themselves anymore as Israeli Jews and to get citizenship, I have a feeling this guy really, really knows the truth. And this is his way of just saying he's had enough. There may actually be something decent in what he's doing. And by the way, that's hard to imagine, but he may actually be doing the right thing without telling the whole story. This action, though, has been very discouraging to a lot of Israelis who view the Labor Party just simply as non-Israeli, as traitors to Jewishness. And, well, he said, get citizenship elsewhere. Israel is not for you. That's what he did this week.
Well, do you think that he is concerned then because he feels that the coming war may have a profound impact and get an awful lot of Jews who are in Israel killed?
He's not saying. It sounds like he's just an outright Israeli traitor. And maybe that's the case, you know? But I think he knows so much. If he's talking about his father being a German representative, I think he knows a lot more than is coming out. But, yeah, that's what he did. He lives in France and won't go back. Look, I'd like to go to Israel someday when there's a revolution, when the military takes over and throws these labor Zionists out of power forever and ever, reconstitutes the Shabak and the police, and gets that place normal, if that is possible, before Israel is destroyed. Okay? I want to go back and live there and speak the Hebrew language and so on and so forth. But right now, it's a very dangerous place. If you happen to be a patriotic, proud Jew, if you happen to be religious, you don't know if you or your children aren't going to be shot dead from one day to the next. And by the way, I'm not saying that lightly. I'm talking about a lot of people I know and a lot of their families who have lost people in... Well, let's put it this way. If you're left-wing and support Oslo, you have not had any losses. If you don't support Oslo, the list is just horrendous right now of victims of the Oslo Accord. Just horrendous.
All right, fine. Of course, this is why you're in the United States, because you feel there is a very real danger to your life. That's
very real. I went to the doctor today. I had no choice. My shoulder got separated. Horrible lumps on my left side where the car hit me. It wasn't just coming close to death. I'll never recover from what was done to me there. Never.
Well, we want to keep you in as good health as we can, Barry, because we've got a lot of years ahead of you, and we're gonna need your help deciphering what's taking place over there.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, first of all, I'm gonna get this over with quickly. To get my latest book, Bye Bye Gaza, as well as the other books, go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, under search, write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, that's Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, and they're very inexpensive. For $10, you can download the book on the computer. For $20, they'll send it to your house. And my website is not Barry Chamish's website. But BarryChamish.com or .net will get you there. So that's that little plug. Look, I told you I was discussing with my New York host what we should call my lecture. And we batted around a whole lot of ideas. And in the end, the lecture is going to be called Overthrowing the Government, semicolon, stopping the new Israeli Holocaust. Now, if we did it any other way, people would think that we're overthrowing the government because of the danger the Palestinians or Hezbollah poses to Israel. No, we want to overthrow the government because of the danger they pose to Israel. And, well, that's the name of my lecture coming up. Now, if we have time, I've got all kinds of other subjects.
You only got about 20 minutes. You take off.
Okay. Now, I'm going to give a very odd story. Yes, I'm going to do this. I had a discussion in Israel with my good friend Rabbi Yisrael Herzog. He's a very respected rabbi. He's a translator of medieval Jewish texts. And the story went like this. He knows of a, I'm trying to think of it, I knew or he knew, but the story was this. Just before Shabbat, a person in the Jerusalem religious neighborhood of Mattersdorf had an emergency. The water main leading to his house burst, and massive amounts of water were flowing out of it. And he found out about this just after Shabbat. He went looking to see why he didn't have water, and then you're talking about the streets are getting slowly filled with this water. It was an enormous amount of water. And to solve it would have required a plumber coming and shutting off the valve, the water main. It popped. So you have to put in a new water main in a big hurry, and then it's over with. But they wouldn't do it because of a Shabbat. And you're talking about 24 or 5 hours where the man is watching the water flow like a river down the streets of Mattersdorf. And he knows this is going to cost him a lot of money, but he doesn't fix it because it's Shabbat. It's the Sabbath. Now, my friend Rabbi Herzog told me over and over again, this is the most righteous kind of Jew there is. You're not allowed to work on the Sabbath. Fixing the water main would have been work, and that was that. And by the way, in Mattersdorf, let's say you want to get a plumber. You can't drive. You would have to walk 7 miles or so to the Arab section, see who's a plumber in the middle of the night, and bring him back by foot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. By the end of the Sabbath, he had wasted $110,000 of water. That's how much water. Water's expensive in Israel. $110,000 wasted. And my friend Rabbi Herzog says to me, now this was the most righteous man. He didn't stop the water from flowing because you don't work on Shabbat, and that's all there is to it. Now, the end of the story gets worse. $110,000 he didn't have. He had to move out of his apartment. And the story probably exaggerated the way I've heard it. The daughter had to hit the streets, and the son had to engage in illegal running of illicit drugs. I've heard it going as far as that. But his life was ruined, absolutely ruined, because he wouldn't close the water main. That would be work. Now, the reason I'm bringing up this story is there's something new in Israel, and it's a phenomenon that's going to kill the country as well. The religious have been forced by the labor Zionists, by the Sabbateans, by the Frankists, to stand by extreme positions. Now, you may not... You know, if you're religious, you may back my friend Rabbi Herzog and say that this was a righteous man. But this righteous man, his life was ruined by not stopping the water from flowing. And I'm saying something has happened to the religious. The old Torah and the old Talmud says if your mule falls during the Sabbath, you can lift it up. In other words, if it's a genuine emergency, then you just have to do something about it. They did nothing because it was the Sabbath. That kind of extremism, that That's just the religious holding onto their own against this horrible labor Zionism and what they've done to the Jewish people in Israel. It's a point. You can either take it or not take it, but it was something that hit me today as something I should mention. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
They're taking positions in Israel. Everyone's taking extreme positions. The left want to see the country die. They don't care that Shimon Peres, serial murderer, proven murderer of Rabin, should have been proven of Sharon, of Rechavam Zevi. They don't care that he's president of the country. No one cares. No one cares that Barak, who oversaw the Sultan Yaakov disaster, the Selim II disaster, where he, well, let's do Sultan Yaakov, where he sent 29 soldiers to their death in a Syrian ambush in July of 1982, and now he's the defense minister. He pulled out of Lebanon. He abandoned the Christian South Lebanese army. By the way, the leader is Antoine Lahad. It bothered me. The last show, I kept calling him Chabad. It's Antoine Lahad. Nonetheless, nobody cares anymore. The religious don't care anymore about anything but keeping the religion. The left don't care anymore except that the state has got to go. It's that simple. The Palestinians are going to take over, and they deserve it because it's their land. You cannot fight when there's no morale left in the country. That's what's happened to the country. Everyone is taking two separate positions, and those positions are clashing, and Israel will not be able to survive it. It's not a united country anymore. The Sfaradim know that they were using horrible experiments. Shimon Peres, who was head of the Atomic Commission, who what can he say, who sent these people to these horrific ringworm experiments, who sent the Yemenite children to America to be used in experiments there. He's the president of the country. This is the president of Israel. Lord, save that country from what has happened to it. I don't think anything can bring it back to be the naive, innocent, patriotic Israel that I moved to 33, 34 years ago. I don't think anything can be done anymore.
What do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's going to be a war there here in the next couple of months?
Look, the war is a matter of time. It's that simple. Right now there's no bombings going on in Israel. That is a very bad sign. A terrorist bombing, I don't mean rockets. They're practicing with rockets. Sderot is gone. The city's abandoned. Ashkelon is getting there very quickly. When Barak was named defense minister, Hezbollah shot three missiles into Kiryat Shmona to remind them of who his bosses really were. Whenever that war starts, Israel is going to be smashed with missiles. And I'll tell you, that state cannot last long being smashed with a missile.
Well, now you mentioned, of course, this is in the south. What about the other town?
It's not the south. Kiryat Shmona is the north.
Okay, fine.
Look, the country is surrounded right now. Even Saudi Arabia has got missiles aimed at the two air bases and the resort of Eilat. The country is surrounded by missiles. When the war starts, last year 4,000 missiles were shot in 1 month, and all of northern Israel, 2 million people, ran for the hills. This time there will be nowhere to run. Look, suddenly something different has happened in Israel. There are a lot, I don't know about a lot of people, but there are enough people who suddenly are taking my position. The broadcaster, Tamar Yona, who's a coward, by the way, she won't put me on her show. Her bosses won't approve it. I'm not giving the gung-ho line. I'm not taking the extreme line now of the Israeli right or the religious. They view that as wrong. They're very, very wrong. I'm actually fighting on their behalf, and I don't know why. I really don't, but I am. She's taking the New World Order position. Eugene Merritt, who really didn't know about the New World Order until we started corresponding, the same thing. You've got something going now where people really are looking at this New World Order. They're looking at Tony Blair. Who the hell invited Tony Blair to Jerusalem the head of the quartet. They now know that it's international, and they're aware that it's international.
Now, is Neret, is this Professor Neret who wrote the World War III, The War Against
the Jews? That's the one.
All right. In fact, I just got his book, and I'm trying to get him on the program. He's a pretty good man.
Well, let's put it this way. He's changed a whole lot since he got on my email list.
All right, fine. Well, we'll see if we can get him on, get the message out. My concern, and I think Perry's concern, is that war is coming to the Near East, probably within a matter of months. How soon, we don't know, but I believe it's coming. We both see Israel in a totally indefensible position. Will America help? Will America stand by and see Israel destroyed? If America does help, what's going to happen then? We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up the program. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, we have like 3 minutes. Is that the wrap-up time?
That's the wrap-up time.
Okay, then I'm going to give that phone number. I want people to meet me. If you're in Denver, I'll be at the July 14th, I'll be at the Beit Messiah. Their number is 303-654-9924. That's 303-654-9924. And in New York, I'll be at the CV Jewish Community, Jewish Center, I'm sorry, on July 22nd, a Sunday morning. And their number is 718-251-1900. That's 718-251-1900. Look, I got a lot of enemies, and sometimes it really gets me down. All the slander against what I'm saying, and that I'm a conspiracy theorist, even if the conspiracies all come true. I've got a lot of enemies out there, but I think it's time, folks, if you have a group and you want to know what's really happening in Israel, and not the propaganda, not the right-wing. There are two other kinds of propaganda out there. One is the right-wing Jewish propaganda, and the other is the Christian Israelist Disneyland propaganda. The fact of the matter, Israel is committing suicide. Now, if you want to know what can be done, and if you want to know how the suicide is being committed, I think it's time you invited me to speak about this. Those two dates are a fine time for me to get to know people.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and anybody out there who's looking for a speaker, why, Barry is available. He's certainly going to have to be writing and making it a tour and getting into churches, getting into organizations. So if you are interested in having Barry Shemesh come to your area, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, my website is... Well, look, I'm going to give my email address.
Go ahead.
Shamish, Chamish, at netvision, netvision.net.il. Chamish at netvision.net.il. Invite me. Be brave, folks. The time has come to be brave. Israel is really in dire straits now. Very, very dire straits.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I share your concern, Barry. I think this is going to influence Israel. I think it's going to have a profound impact on our country as well, and because, of course, the United States, the future of the United States, and the future of Israel are in, certainly it cannot be separated. Well, we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Have a good weekend. Till then, bye-bye. May the Lord be with you.
Thank you again, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we hope that you've enjoyed our conversation with Barry Shemesh. Let me simply point out that if you'd like to understand the background of what's going on over there, why, we have some pamphlets we put together. They're called, actually there are three of them, a compilation of our newsletters. They're entitled Foreknowledge 911. Foreknowledge 911, and it's a compilation of about 15 newsletters that will give you a background and understanding of what happened on the 9/11 that you will not get elsewhere. So, if you'd like to get that, those three pamphlets, they come as a set. We have four tape set on why did the buildings come down, or four tape or four CD set. We have, of course, what really happened, a 911 update, fascinating interviews with people you're never going to hear elsewhere. And then we have a number of DVDs. Certainly we have a 911 Press for the Truth, 911 in Plain Sight, and The Day That Changed the World Forever. There are five of them in this set, and we think they're the best ones are out there, and anybody who wants to order them and would like a free set, a free copy of Loose Change, you can ask for it. We'll get it for you. You can get the DVD separately or get them together. But the one thing is that if you look at Building 7 coming down and you watch it a few times, you can see it on Google. It's very obvious that this was a controlled demolition. The center of the building collapses first, then the basement of the building collapses, and that is the hallmark of a controlled demolition. The question is, how was Osama bin Laden able to sneak in and place those explosive charges there at the end of the day? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have not been told the truth as to why we're in the Middle East. But even more frightening, we have not been told the truth as to why we're still fighting in Afghanistan, why we are still fighting in Iraq. I mean, we've been fighting in Iraq longer than the Second World War. But the next question is, we have not been told the truth about what is going to happen next. If you really want to understand from the spiritual point of view what is going on, you want to read our February 2007 newsletter. It's available on the internet at radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. Pull down my February 2007 newsletter. Read it. Reread it. These are not my words. These are the words of, well, the words of a man named, a spirit, named Joao Cool, who channeled through Alice Bailey, who was an inspiration for George Herbert Walker Bush's reference to the New World Order and 1,000 Points of Light. Alice Bailey was a Luciferian woman who actually served as a channel for Joao Cool. And if you read what she wrote, it begins to make very, very clear what the future holds for America, for the Near East, for the Middle East. Again, radioliberty.com. Get the information. Begin making preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. Understand that this is a spiritual battle, and nothing going on makes sense unless you understand the spiritual forces that are moving Israel, America, Iran, and the whole Muslim world towards a massive confrontation, wherein the Christians and the Jews will go to war with the Muslim world, and I fear for the outcome of what lies ahead. Under any circumstances, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our permission and our protection. And of course, remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Your job is to warn people, to get them to think. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.